Okay, here we are back with our special guest, Bill Tompkins. Let's keep going and kind of get caught up here, Bill. We've got so many things you'd like to talk about. You're going to have to come back again, I'm afraid. There's just so much in your mind that it's remarkable. All right. Now, so the admiral you worked under, we recently got a biography, a sketch on him, some of his naval assignments. His name was Rico, R-I-C-O, and last name B-A-T-T-A, Bata, right?
That's correct. And in the book, I got it incorrectly put in the book. And you can see in the where he signed the receipts to leave the base. There's copies of those in the book.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to get that answer from looking at the way he signs it.
Sure, understand. Okay, very good. So that's, for those of you who have been listening, that's the gentleman that has been in charge of this operation, the debriefing of Americans who were sent into Germany during the war and who were rotated out and back home here, and with whom Bill Tompkins sat as they were debriefed in front of a very small group of people. And they brought back photographs of some of the German flying discs and other very secret information. I don't know how they got it, but apparently they did. That's what Bill Tompkins was hearing during the war as a young man. And because of his prowess and his gift at designing, he was brought into the top level of this program. There may be something else at work here too, Bill, not just your ability to design that you were pulled in for. We don't know, but strange things happen. That's all we do know.
Okay, I wonder if we could talk just for a few minutes about extended life.
Sure we can.
I'd sort of like to go into that because, again, at TRW Space Systems, they were down at Beach, they had, like we had mentioned before, they have laboratories, not departments.
Right.
And then they have sub labs in those laboratories.
TRW is a very unusual corporation. Very unusual.
Actually, we didn't know it at the time, but it was owned by the oil companies. And they controlled the medical part that we were doing because we had a lot of advanced works on advanced medical. But we didn't know that they controlled that, too, in the country.
All right.
But,
life extension.
Life extension. Now, in the three labs that are working this program independently, my effort was not that I was a doctor that did surgery or whatever. My involvement was using our military program for developing ballistic missiles or space satellites or space vehicles. And so it's called System 375. And that's concept phase, definition phase, acquisition phase, and operational phase.
Right.
And then every block is put on that big long piece of paper, identifying what has to take place and in its proper order for thousands of events that need to take place to develop a spaceship. So I took that same philosophy and I took it into their advancements of addressing how to live longer. And so I'm not saying that TRW started this, but TRW had three separate labs and their sub-labs working on three different ways to accomplish this. And so essentially what they came up with, this is like 1969. What they did is they got into the surgical part of medicine. And in that effort, they found out, first of all, they cured cancer. And then secondly, they identified, like Dr. Bob Wood has said in his book, alien viruses. which has been out now, I think, a couple of years. And in Bob Wood's book, he identifies different types of viruses and different things, including cancer that was given to us on this planet to help control our lifespan by the extraterrestrials. And so what this got itself into is how can we do surgery better, or do we need surgery? And I want to use one example. Like my situation with this girlfriend that I've been going with now for 64 years. We did get married.
See, yo, you did? Aw, you shouldn't.
We did, yeah.
You shouldn't have bothered. 64 years surpasses marriage. That's wonderful.
With the same girl. Wait a minute. With the same girl. Okay. She's blonde, too, and she has blue eyes. Okay.
And she looks like she's about 23, right? You grabbed one of those Nordic secretaries is what you're trying to tell us.
Sort of. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Now, anyway, this program then, they were doing all of the different types of surgeries. And I want to explain this.
Uh-huh.
Because my girlfriend has had the program where she had the problem with her knees.
Right.
And now this was caused when she got cancer twice. And they gave her another 5% of another part of the medical goods that they give you. And this then on her feet removed all feeling of everything below the knee. So she doesn't know where her feet are, so she has very big problem trying to walk.
Okay.
Anyway, she had the problem with the knees, and the bones started at the knees grinding against each other. So mm-hmm. she goes in doctor here in Southern California, mm-hmm. and he takes this great big quarter-inch needle and it pushes it into the between the knees, mm-hmm. and he puts stuff in there.
He puts what in there?
He puts a chemical in there.
All right, a chemical. All right.
Yep. And he does this 4 times, and then it doesn't work, so you got to have surgery, right?
They usually replace the knee now, yeah.
Well, what they do, they chop your leg off, okay? They chopped her from one leg off, and 2 years later, she chopped the other one off. Anyway, they chopped
her
off.
Wait. Bill, wait a minute. She had arthritic knees, and they cut off her legs?
Yeah, and then they put this big block of iron in the lower part and another part in the upper part of her leg, okay? Mm-hmm. And then they sew it all up, but it's tremendously painful, still doesn't work. And so at TRW, they came up with a different method of curing this problem. They came up with the exact same material that your knees have got right now. Okay, that's between the top and the bottom bone. The same material. And they put that in at TRW with a tiny little needle.
Are you talking about cartilage?
And, yes. And so that completely cured that medical problem in 1968-69 time period. But the oil companies own the drug companies, and they own the medical industry.
Oh, sure.
So this surgery continues to today. We still got it, but there's no reason for it. So not only did they cure cancer, which they found out was an extraterrestrial virus, but they fixed the knee problem for everybody, but nobody's getting it today because it's still classified.
Who figured treatment out, Bill? Was this an ET gift, or did our scientists figure it out?
It was both, actually. And the TRW was being supported by more than one Nordic-type group.
Okay.
And they were, in some areas, hardly supported. In other areas, they almost came up with the exact thing we needed, and we got it free. But the point is, it never got out of the facility.
I understand.
In other words, they're never allowed to use this.
Well,
and
now
that people realize this.
No, now they have. Well, they don't. Now they have knee replacements and hip replacements that they do all the time for people. Different technologies are used.
But,
well, you're saying that they were able to inject with a chemical in the late 60s and have the knee regenerate cartilage and basically rebuild itself. Now, I have only one good knee left. My right knee is gone. And so what you're saying makes a lot of sense to me. But they did something to her that sounds almost barbaric,
the needle wasn't quite a quarter inch. It was
no, I don't mean the needle. I'm talking about the metal rods they put in her legs.
Well, it's a big metal. It's like riveted to the lower bone, and the other one on the top is riveted to the upper leg.
Yeah.
And this is insane. I mean, this is this is medieval surgery.
Right. Well, so is chemotherapy, radiation, and disfiguring surgery ridiculous. It's not necessary. Yeah. There are many cures for cancer. What about life extension, Bill? You're 93 years young, and you sound like you're in your 30s or 40s. I mean, it's amazing.
Okay, well, I signed up for this program. I'm being facetious. Anyway, so what happens when you sign up for this program? I want everybody that's listening to the program here to listen to what we're going to say, because this is fantastic. What was developed or being developed in, say, 69 at TRW was a fix for this other problem. And the problem is the fact that people are stepping out of the picture in their 70s, or some of them even in their 60s, and they don't even have time to contribute. And everybody addressed it in that manner, that we're doing these studies. You need time to contribute, okay? You can't do it in 50 years here. So they came up with what essentially... easiest to say it, with four pills that you take over 3.5 to 4 months. And, of course, it's not an aspirin, but it's a pill. It has this chemical in it. And what happens is you immediately feel better, okay? Gradually, over that three-month period, or 2 months, depending on your system, the men revert back to 29, and the girls revert back to 21. And we're talking about everything in the body is what you would have when you were 29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Total
all
rejuvenation.
Energy,
yeah.
Yeah, except your brain now has a capability of over 400% of what you had before. And now that's not really hard to do when you realize you're only using 2.3% of your brain, because you're smoking the pot that comes out of the sky every other day in the United States now, where the extraterrestrials are dropping the gases on us. So what happens then is that you revert back to 29, the men, and the young ladies to 21. And you stay there like Nordics. Now, not everything in the Nordic body, if we've defined it enough, is exactly the same as us, but it's very close. So those people live a lifespan of 1,500 to 2,200 comparable years, most Nordics. So other extraterrestrials live longer and some live much less. But if we'll accept the possibility that we are still related and the Nordics are our cousins, even though we have slight differences, there's no reason why we should be stepping out of the picture at 70 or 80 years, or even less. And so this program today You can look it up on the computer. All you got to do is type in extended life. Type it in and study it. Because enough information has been released to where they are convinced that in less than 2 years, well, that's now less than a year and a half ago, the decision was made that this will really work and that it can be implemented to essentially anybody that desires to do this. Now, if you compare what we just said to the Nordic people at this time in space are here to help us fix our problem with the extraterrestrials that aren't too good. And you compare that we could live the 2,000 years that the Nordics can live. Wow. And that means that, like TRW requirement was, that you don't contribute enough. You may have your doctors in five or six different fields, but it doesn't do much good because you don't have time to contribute. And this is the way TRW addressed this problem. And so the three separate laboratories that were working this came up with the same answer. And since 1968-69 time period to today, this has been implemented and is being implemented by the four largest medical groups in the United States. Scripps, right here in San Diego, is one of the groups that are working on this right now as we're talking. And I think that as unreal as what we've just said, once again, there's things taking place the public is not aware of. There's documentations on it. Yes, you have to look it up. Somebody has to tell you about it because it's not in the newspapers.
Of course.
It's not in conventional TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even in the news part of the computer news agencies. But look up those little words, and you're going to have a real surprise.
All right,
give
them the words again.
It's simply extended life. It's just two words.
Not life extension, extended life. All right, I wanted to be sure about that. Okay.
And, so I'm just suggesting that the audience, when they get a chance, look that up and maybe smile a little bit.
Now,
it's like around the corner.
You, my friend, are 93. All right, you may live another 90 years. Who the hell knows? I'm going to ask you a question. It's none of my damn business. You can tell me that if you want to. Are you getting any kind of longevity, life extension, help from anybody to remain so healthy and vibrant? Or did you pick things up along the way that you've incorporated into your life that enable you to be every bit as on top of your game as you probably ever were?
Okay, I still got a lot of hair. If you saw a picture of me, you wouldn't believe it now. And my hair was receding 40 years ago, and then it started coming back. But to answer your question...
Well, the question is, why did it start coming back? Something happened 40 years ago.
Okay, yeah. And this little girl, blonde girl, the one that worked...
They're trouble, Bill. They're trouble. Blondes are always trouble.
Okay,
remember that.
But I know that. But, also, she's helpful, okay?
Yes.
And interesting enough, as naive as you can accept, you don't smoke and you don't drink.
How did you know that? I don't smoke and I don't drink. Now, how did you know that? Oh, I'm kidding you. Go ahead.
I didn't know that. I'm just saying this is what this blonde that was my secretary was telling me.
I knew it was a secretary. Doggone it, I knew it. All right, yeah.
Somehow, I didn't believe she was a Nordic. It took me 2.5 years to finally, I had her for almost 3 years, and even my assistant, engineering section chief, he didn't believe she was either. But it turned out that everything that she came up with, massive changes to the NASA program that's being done incorrectly. And she comes up with what we have to do. Mm-hmm. She telepathically gives it to me, sometimes verbally. And we then study that part, come up with a proposal to change to that. It ends up being one of some 37 proposal of three massive changes to the Apollo program.
Wow.
And so you got to say, yes, maybe she really was a Marty.
Yeah. Especially when you hear her voice in your head and she's looking the other direction and her mouth isn't moving. It's kind of a giveaway. There's something going on.
Something's going on.
Yeah. Well, as you know, my father was the public relations director of Douglas Aircraft and then McDonnell Douglas. He used to go to the Cape all the time for launches in Vandenberg. And he would talk about the beautiful staffers they had there. He actually mentioned the secretaries. So they had him at Douglas also.
Yeah. They did have, I would say, not only the pretty girls, but the brilliant ones.
They're all very smart. Oh, yeah. He said that. Yeah.
And we also had something else that none of the business had. No other aerospace company had it, not even the biomedical. We dressed sharp all the time. Everybody did. The dressman did.
Yep.
Everybody had a tremendous part in this unbelievable Apollo thing. It was crazy.
Yeah, my dad dressed up the same way, Bill. Suit and tie, coats, classy coats. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Always dressed to the nines.
Even the sport clothes were sharp. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's not just that my assistant and I did this. They all did it. The draftsmen.
Right. Yeah.
As soon as they came on board, they did. And so part of this was attitude. Part of it was collectively doing something fantastic. Everybody enjoyed it. It was unreal.
Well, I was just a little kid, but I remember my dad was very, obviously very happy in his work, intrigued. He would go to the Cape for a launch, and there were things he could say, things he wouldn't say. He'd come by and see me on the way to Vandenberg. I lived in Santa Barbara. And he was in a very unusual and interesting position, just not as well as situated as you, but I got a definite feeling everything you're telling me makes perfect sense to me. So
it's amazing, really. And I think he enjoyed it.
Absolutely. You got it. He did.
Nobody worked. Wait a minute. Nobody was forced to work. Everybody couldn't wait.
He never acted like it was a job. He loved it.
That's
You're
correct.
Right.
Yeah. That's exactly. Your dad was exactly the same. And I think that whole thing was amazing. Yes, the whole thing went down because the manufacturing, marketing just totally destroyed the company. But that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
But I just want to say this thing of extended life is real. Yes, there's going to be problems with it as many people get into it. And like anything that new is going to happen. But I think the fact that this is potentially going to happen right at the time when we have the opportunity to either fix whatever extraterrestrials are doing to us, stop it, and or leave the planet, go out into the galaxy where there are billions of other stars with planets that don't have the structural problem that planet Earth has.
And, interesting. So geologically, this place is not to the liking of some of our visitors, right?
Yeah. And so we've learned this from many of our visitors, and we've learned a great deal more of what's out there. And gee whiz.
Well, we've got thousands of volcanoes, all, and many of them around the Ring of Fire, which has been predicted and forecast by Edgar Cayce-type people, prophet seers. We're getting into, clearly, a geologically much more active period, not to mention the climate, on the planet. We've got earthquakes, we've got volcanoes, we've got massive storms, we have weird weather. It's not the most stable.
Yeah, and we even have the Pacific continent climbing up on top of the American continent.
That's
and
right.
Pushing it down into the magma.
The Pacific plate,
It's ridiculous. Now, we don't talk about it, but...
Well, that's the Cascadian, I think it's a subduction fault, but the Cascadian fault is where the Pacific plate and the North American continent collide, and one is the Pacific's going over, pushing the continental U.S. under, and it is so over-torqued right now that there are people in geology who suggest that the next Cascadian earthquake off the coast of Oregon and Washington will essentially cause a tsunami so big that everything west of Interstate 5, if you look at a map, will be washed away or lost or damaged. That's what they're suggesting.
That's correct. Yes, you've got it correct. Yes.
And, wow.
So maybe it's possible that we could move out there and we wouldn't have all those problems. Anyway, I didn't want to make a big deal out of this, but I think the two areas are extremely interesting, and they're related to, particularly to the Nordics, who actually are putting together a program to help us out.
Well, I'm here, and I'm a volunteer, so if they want to come along and make me an offer I won't refuse, I'm here. So.
Okay, I'll join the club.
Okay. All right, now, let's bring George and Frank in here. Then we're going to shift gears and go into time travel next. So let's bring George and Frank up. George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How you been, George?
I'm fine.
Yeah,
I would say that, well, this sounds crazy in a way, but I get phone calls from people who claim that they're alien. And it's interesting that the people who claim they're alien, they say they're the blue aliens, and they're related to the Scottish people in northern Scotland. But in any case, they claim that they're attempting to help the Earth and, you might say, keep it together. And that they do a lot of active helping of, well, keeping the Earth, you know, solid and so on.
So when they do things to help, is this mental energy work that they do? These aliens?
No, they claim that they have spaceships and they come down and they put in some kind of poles and vibration and so on.
You know, I wouldn't, let me say this, hold on, hold that thought. We have seen many videos of UFOs over active volcanoes and Mount Popo in Mexico. We've seen pictures of UFOs going down into the active volcano. They have volcano cams, and you can't mistake them. So, okay, geologically, they're down there inside the Earth putting vibrational things in, perhaps to calm and move earthquake faults that are backed up and torqued and ready to snap. Interesting. Very interesting.
Now, they're calling me and telling me these things, and I don't know if you want to have them on the program, but they certainly sound...
Well, these are blue aliens, and they're related to the Scottish, and they're from the planet Trump. Is that what you're telling me?
not Trump, but... I'm trying to think what the planet... In any case, they own a fairly large section of the space, the way they tell me.
All right.
But I come up with these, you might say, very technological questions, and they always have an answer. So they have certainly a lot of intelligence, even if they're
fakes,
mentally unstable. And I'm beginning to feel that they are, in fact, who they say they are.
Well, now, who's to say? I don't know.
I know it's a strange situation, but I'm just saying that they're going along and saying what Bill is saying is the truth.
I think that the planet is stranger than we could imagine what's going on here, and I think that that's pretty clear. Let me say hello to Frank. Hi, Frank.
So here, yes.
How are we doing?
Good, Jeff. The volcano cams you talk about, I've seen some of that. They are remarkable. It's some remarkable footage. And some of the contactees I've spoken to have said they are doing stabilization work in the inner Earth to prevent a lot of the catastrophes that normally occurred here. So they're doing stabilization work. And I know Bill's got a lot to share regarding time travel, telepathy, and things like that. But he shared something extraordinary today. We're going to have to return to Medford for him to tell you and your audience about one of the most extraordinary luncheons he's had.
Okay.
Medford.
All right, we'll do that. Yeah, your phone is choppy. I don't know why. It shouldn't be. We understood you fine, but your voice is about 20% not there. It just keeps dropping out. So we'll see. Are you on a cell phone?
Yes, I am. Usually I have no issues with it.
Yeah, is this a cell phone you're on? See, we can't hear you. I couldn't hear your answer.
Yes. Yes,
okay.
I am.
All right, we should probably go for a landline next time if possible, or turn your body around and point that phone in a different direction. That might help. All right, let's go back to William Tompkins now. And Bill, you there?
Yes.
Okay, let's turn George and Frank back down so we get a nice clean audio from Bill. Medford, Oregon, you had a luncheon on a hill in the Medford, Oregon area. Medford, Oregon is in the Rogue River Valley, and one of the most beautiful rivers in the Northwest, certainly. And it's a very nice area. There are no nuclear targets or nuclear power plants anywhere near here. And before Fukushima, it was upwind of everything. Now, there is no upwind anymore because Fukushima is spewing its garbage and death over the entire Northern Hemisphere, all the way around the planet. But that be as it may, let us ask you to tell us about this luncheon you had on a hill.
Okay. Well, we had a Navy League group that I started, which is there's about 56,000 people in the U.S. Navy League.
Wow.
They're not members of the Navy, but Theodore Wilson actually started. Years and years ago. But it's a support group. It has two missions, one to support families and the Navy personnel, and then the second is technical, and it works with, in my area, with aerospace and with biomedical, of course. So there was a very unusual thing that took place. My wife and I were heading for a vacation, and we wanted to move up to Oregon and get out from underneath all the pressure after the Apollo program laid off, I guess, almost immediately. Half of the people, it was 40,000 people.
So this would have been in the early 1970s?
A little later than that.
All right.
And so we moved up there, and we drove all over back up to different areas in the state. And we liked Medford, so we moved up there and rented a place. And then I designed a futuristic house, and I wish I had the photographs and you could see it. But anyway,
Bill? You built it?
Yeah, and I had this contractor build it for us.
I'll go see it. If you get the address to me, don't say it over the air, but I'll go see it. That'd be fun.
Yeah, and I think you would really get a kick out of it. Anyway, there were some things wrong with the direction of the house that we didn't care for. And so we made a lot of money. We doubled our input.
Uh-huh.
And I designed another place, which is really interesting. And it's facing out toward the Pacific on the side of this volcano. It's an extinct volcano.
Mount McLaughlin?
It's on the east side of Medford. And so...
That's Mount Pitt or Mount McLaughlin. They have two names for it.
Yeah, McLaughlin is what most people called it.
Right.
Okay, anyway, we built one on a lot which faced out over the entire valley.
Wow.
And you can't see the ocean, but you can see everything else. Fantastic view. And it has glass all around it. And we loved it anyway.
I know the area well. That's that volcano is not far from Lake of the Woods, one of the lakes up here, and we see it. I go up there, and you can see it's a spectacular mountain. And so you were on the lower side of that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of homes there now. Anyway, because they had people in this view. But anyway, I started this Navy League Council. I got a hold of a fellow that I knew that would have been in the Navy. He lived up there.
Uh-huh.
He was a captain. And I talked to him, and so he didn't go into the extraterrestrial, which is what I started with the whole thing. But anyway, he and I put it together. I had the ship models, and I put those in the big mall there in Medford.
Yeah.
Stores, so everybody could see it. And they got the advertisement in the paper about starting a new Navy League. And man, we had 170 people in less than 4 or 5 months.
Huh.
And half of those were all Navy, ex-Navy officers.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them had their own airplanes. And so we put together this program and we started studying extraterrestrial. And we did that by having the regular meeting first, and then after the regular meeting, we then went into all the aspects of extraterrestrial. And one of the things that was extremely interesting there was that these pilots, these Navy, ex-Navy officers, they were, many of them were pilots, Navy pilots. So they had their own airplanes, they had their own business, and so they flew their planes all over Western United States in their business. So obviously they had to fly around Mount Shasta. And of course that was to find the doors that the UFOs kept coming out of and flying into. And so way before I even started this council, that's what these fellows were doing. They were trying to find the doors. And they got a hold of these big marine trucks that had six wheels, four in the back and two in front.
Uh-huh.
And so they would drive all the way around the base trying to find the doors.
And this is Mount Shasta?
There is no door. Mount Shasta, yeah.
It's
a massive underground extraterrestrial facility. And these fellas have their own planes, and if they're coming in from the south, they go by the mountain, and here's the UFOs coming out. And if they go east, they go to the north side of the mountain, and here they see UFOs flying in from outer space and going into the north side.
Did they see an opening, or did they just see them go down and disappear into the mountain?
They disappear. There is no door. And they never found a door.
Okay.
So the molecular structure changes and allows them to enter.
Or how about this? Maybe they did have a big opening, but there was some kind of a visual screen, a hologram, that made it look like it was part of the mountain, but they could fly right through it. That's an easier out.
Okay, that's an easier out. I'll buy that one. Anyway, this was very, very stressful for all these guys. And so they were into the extraterrestrial before he even got up there.
Huh.
So one day, we had we had the mayor was in this group, county commissioner, Rick Holt was in this group.
I met Rick a couple times.
Okay. Did you ever find out where he went?
No, he actually lived about a mile away from me. He was defeated in one of the 10 years ago or something like that. He made the trains run again here. He was an interesting guy.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting fellow.
I didn't know him, but if he was in your group, that was the sense I got when I talked to him. He said he knew a lot of stuff. We got to talking about a little bit of unusual paranormal sorts of things, and he was right there. So now this makes sense. Okay. Go ahead, please.
All right. So this whole group then, not everybody, but most of the group, were into extraterrestrial. And this is fantastic because it's a little bony place, mostly just farming and logging trees. But here's all these top Navy officers living there.
Yeah.
And so we had them all in this Navy League Council, and one day into the office, somebody telephoned the office of the council and said they were offering the council's they used the word special projects people a lunch. And so whoever answered the phone called one of us. They didn't call me. But anyway, they said, how many people could we have come? And so he said, well, we'd like to have your upper group of your special projects people. So what's special projects? Okay, they knew what it was. It was extraterrestrial. So then they were given instruction as to how to get to this mountain area and what roads to take. And then when it got to be one main dirt road, how to maneuver up the side of this mountain, which is halfway between Ashland and Medford. Only it's about 50 miles west in the real rural area, nothing around it. And it's a single mountain, and so.
So it's in between. It's in between I-5 and the coast. It's west.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Coast,
so it's out past out past Williams and out there. It's way out there.
That's, way out in the boonies. Okay.
That's Bigfoot country.
Okay. All right. Now, so we had about 6 cars, I guess, and there were 28 of us, I guess. And so we kept driving out till we went to the dirt road, and then the dirt road finally turned. And this is interesting. Somebody made foot diameter signs, which are round, and it has an extraterrestrial face on it. It's a yellow sign. And these were put all the way from 5, the freeway, all the way to where you start to go up this mountain.
Really?
And, yes, really.
That's fascinating.
Okay, now, who did that? Okay. Anyway, so we all managed to go stay together, and we start up the mountain. Now, the dirt road that we had going up the hill on the west side, okay, towards the ocean, it had never been driven in 20 years.
Was this an old logging road or something?
Yeah, and it's all eroded.
Uh-huh.
So that when you start up, it was 45 degrees off the right-hand side where this road was, and
right.
Probably 45 degrees all the way around the mountain. Anyway, we managed to drive like 3 miles an hour up the side of this thing. We get up to the top, and all of a sudden, there was a flat area, like a sort of a road thing. And it wasn't made of asphalt, and it wasn't made of concrete, but it was a nice, smooth, flat area, trees all around, so you can't see anything. We drove on to this. This is up on top of the mountain. So we drove on this for about 2 blocks, and there was a split. So we didn't know which one to take, so we turned right. And we drove only 1 block, but there's trees. I mean, there's millions of trees, so you can't see this other open area. And this other open area has 3 vehicles, and they're parked there. And different people saw different vehicles of the 28, 29 people that were for the luncheon. So to me, they looked like massive helicopters. They were bright colors, silver, red, blue, brilliant colors. And the landing gears were retracted, and they were floating. They were floating like 5 feet above this flat area. What in the heck is that? So while we're trying to figure that out, we're getting late. So we turn around and go back down to where we got on the road part, and we drove about 5 blocks. And on the left was this enormous hunting lodge. I mean, it was the ceiling was like 4 feet high. I mean, 4 stories high.
What was it again? And a what?
It was a
hunting lodge. Okay.
Yeah, massive hunting lodge, okay?
Uh-huh.
And hardly any area for parking, but we park our cars out front.
Yeah.
So we go inside. Nobody meets us in this great big open area that then leads down a hallway to this enormous room, which had like 30-foot ceilings. And this one young lady apologized for not meeting us at the door, but something was going on. Anyway, we're ushered in. Everybody is dressed in dress clothes. And, of course, we were all dressed in dress clothes.
There were already people. Bill, excuse me.
Yeah.
Okay, you come across this hunting lodge, 3 or 4 stories tall. That's enormous. You go inside, and there's some kind of an event going on in there, you say, and there are other people in there you were led to?
There was like about 30 other people.
Okay.
They were getting a drink, and they were talking, and so they came over and introduced themselves, some of them, and by name and everything, and they were so glad that we came. And
this is out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, sir.
No, I have one question, Bill, please. Who, again, invited your group to go out to this location, and who knew about the location? How did you get invited to go out here?
Okay, that didn't make any sense either, because we got a telephone call that came into the office, okay?
Right.
And it said they were inviting several of the Navy League Council people to lunch. And so that was the information how to get there. And that if we were, if we approved going, they would then set the time up and the date up. So but nobody got any information about who these people were, what the agenda was. It's just a nice lunch.
You took it on faith, and you guys all drove out there. And I know exactly what Bill is talking about, and this is virgin territory. There's nothing out there except beautiful mountains and rolling hills all the way to the ocean.
And fantastically beautiful pine trees, okay?
Yeah.
They're just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bill, hold on now. Wait a second. What I want to do is I have to pause for the top of the hour here. We're going to stop. This is a perfect place to pause, and then we're going to come back and pick this story up in just a few minutes.
It is wild.
Yeah, I'm in.
It is wild.
I'm in Ashland, and you asked about what happened to Rick Holt. I may have Rick's phone number. If you wanted to get in touch with him, I might be able to do that. I don't know. I'll have to check it.
Oh, thank you. You're a gentleman and a scholar. Yes.
Well, one or the other. So what we'll do is take our break, come back, and what Bill is describing is truly as beautiful as it gets in nature. And this is a fascinating story, for me especially. I'm up in the area, so, well, we'll see. All right, hold on. We'll come right back with more and Mr. William Tompkins in just a few minutes.